session number 1259202.
Mr. Duval Realto.
Yeah. This Bill McLean, with whom, whose brother was in Palestine, Finlay McLean, I was billeted with them and spent 4 months with them, and I must be very grateful. They were ex-Malayan, but he was very, very good. Unfortunately, I do agree that there was a certain amount of prejudice against the Palestine police, especially against the new commissioner, which was Colonel Gray. You've heard that name?
Nicol Gray.
Nicol Gray, and assisted by Dick Catlin, he went as number two. There were quite another, several senior officers from Palestine went out there. We weren't well received, but at the same time, I thought they did a quite good job. I would agree that we did not have knowledge of local people, either language, habits, or anything else.
Was it because the existing Malayan police regarded you as some kind of a threat to their promotion or something?
That I wouldn't know. I do think that they wanted organising. I can quote some most peculiar incidents. I thought some of them were quite useless, actually.
Could you quote an instance?
No, in general, how can I put it? I don't want to sound too prejudiced, because some of them turned out very good later. But I think possibly their prejudice was based on the fact that Colonel Gray was the new commissioner, and a very strong character indeed. But he would not tolerate the bickering that went on amongst the ex-Malayan officers about his appointment. However, he was eventually asked to leave when he went 2 years later. I myself was stationed in the depot with the policy of instructing the Malay recruits in small arms and techniques, mainly revolver. And I built up a series of special type ranges for them, which came in for very favourable comment from other people, and I got on well with the young Malay officers. Teach them small arms technique and also the use of riot gun control, things like that, riot rules and things like that, which you require in Palestine. I was in the depot from 1948 until 1952, when I came home on leave.
Did you have any contact with the guerrillas who were operating against the authorities there?
I never had contact whatsoever. I was involved on operations against them, but never had personal contact with them. Not on this occasion, actually. Did later, we'll come on to that. But although I was injured in a grenade incident in which a young Malay got involved on a grenade, and he released the grip and the handle came off, and because it went off, I was standing next to him. I was teaching him, actually. He was injured. But in 1954, 1951, I was awarded the Colonial Police Medal. For my work there.
But you, in that first period, 48-42, did you go on...
48-52.
Mm. Did you go on any operations against the guerrillas?
Very often. We used to supplement the... probably a cordoning operation, particularly if it had to be killed, because we had so many recruits there, and you came in for 3 months' service, and probably people in their last month of service will be taken out for the purpose of cordoning operations, when because very, very often a lot of areas were being cleared, you see. If they were near Kuala Lumpur, then they'd call on extra manpower from the depot. I often went with them. But it did not did not take in jungle patrols.
Which areas in particular would you set up the cordons in?
Complementary to Kuala Lumpur, or Batu Caves, Kadang, little areas around there.
Did you ever have any guerrillas trying to break through the cordons?
I never come across any, I know. There were, I know, there were one or two people picked up after we cordoned an area, but when you're concerned with the cordoning arrangements, you never literally got mixed up with what was going on inside the cordon. Your job was to supervise the cordoning, you see.
How close together were the men in the cordon?
Well, depending on the number of people you had and who was the size of the area, but you could say we'd like to get probably one every 50 yards or so.
Sounds as though it would be quite easy to get through the cordon.
Oh, yeah.
If they were 50 yards apart.
Mm. Well, fairly open ground. It would be open ground. Not so easy then.
How did the personal danger to you in Malaya compare with Palestine?
Well, circumstances were different. Whereas it was all urban work in Palestine, it was in the urban areas were quite safe. It was the jungle that was dangerous, the outside areas. But in Jerusalem, it's obviously the urban areas where the business was going on.
So you said you went on leave in 52.
Yeah.
And then you came back to a different job?
Yes, I went back to a place called Tanjung Kling, which is Malacca, to take charge of special constable training.
What exactly were the special constables?
They were Malays. There were a few Chinese, not many. And their job was to supplement the existing police force. They're only on a temporary basis. But this was in late 52, and their job was to take over guarding of premises, things like that. Probably the odd patrol, but not a lot. They weren't on a permanent basis. This I did for about a year.
What did you think of their quality as special constables?
Not a lot.
Why not?
I don't think they're... A man who's been living in a camp, little kampong with a village, to go and adapt himself to this way of life, I don't think it's against the philosophy of the Malays, actually. Basically, they're great people sitting around, dressing up, things like that, but not great people for that sort of work. But I must say, some of the regular police were very good, but different time, different calibre. I did this for about a year, and also gave a little bit of advanced training to what we know as the police lieutenants. They were Europeans, British in the main, and in order to bring up their standard, I used to run a personal course for about 10 or so at a time. it'd be a 2-week course, and went on for about 6 months actually. So then I moved, transferred to a place called Bahau, which is Negris and Bilan, which is quite where a big operation taking place.
What kind of work did you have to do at Bahau?
I was the what they call the OCPD, Officer Commanding Police District. Quite a big area, and there was a lot of terrorist activity going on. Policy was to deny any food to the terrorists who used to come in and take the food from the various shops. And quite a lot of terrorist activity going on in the area. We had a Gurkha regiment there, the 2nd, 7th, I think. Gurkhas, yeah. And they were mainly patrolling activity. The police took over a static role, guarding a lot of rubber estates down there, and they took over the role of guarding the rubber estates. With the odd mobile patrol through the rubber. I met a few people, and it was on one particular occasion. I went up to an estate called Glendale Estate, which is a short ride on the train, and had breakfast with the estate manager, off he went, and then an hour later, a report came through, just been shot. And I went off in the armoured car, and we ran into the terrorists. Unfortunately, they got away. We couldn't get them. They disappeared into the jungle. There's no exchange of shots at all. It was just a fleeting glimpse of them. They went.
Who was the guerrilla leader in your area?
I couldn't tell you. There were several units involved down there. The general. I don't think there was any guerrilla leader. In a sense of word, the Gurkhas used to do the deep patrolling, deep jungle patrolling, and they had quite a lot of success there. In fact, I remember four terrorists being brought out one day, having been shot. I had a police station overrun by terrorists and all the small arms taken. Now, I'd never had anybody shot there at the time. I think the Gurkhas lost a couple, but we didn't.
Did you know the guerrilla leaders at the time?
No, none at all. I didn't know it.
What was the level of intelligence about them?
Well, that didn't particularly affect me, the limit of intelligence. That was done by the special branch. And I wasn't interested. I'm mainly interested involving activity. For instance, if my special branch man said to me, I suspect those houses down there, so the Chinese coolies, labourers, were living and housing or harbouring equipment and gear like that belonged to the terrorists, then we're going to search it, and I would supply the cordon, you see, possibly take part in the search. But who the man was didn't concern me at all, really.
What type of things would you find in these searches?
Well, a lot of people, the terrorists in a lot of cases used to involve people in the kampong, see, or these areas, the Chinese coolie area quarters. Food was an absolute necessity, and they would use it to collect food. And if you saw, there was a lot of food there that was beyond the needs of the people living there, then they would be very suspect. And if the rumour came, if a story came back that a place was being involved and they wanted to remove all the gear, and that we would organise a search party. I had several rubbish states under my control. Got along well with the local managers. When I first made contact with Ted Dexter. Remember Ted Dexter?
Cricketer. Mm. He was in Malaya?
Yeah, serving with the Hussars, doing the National Service. I remember being at Bahal Club one day and I was watching the cricket and I thought, that fella's got a nice right arm bowling. And it was Ted Dexter. And they had a little 9-hole golf course attached and he used to play golf there. And one hole was over 500 yards. He'd be on in two. Great fella.
Did you know a rubber planter there called Booker, George Booker?
Booker, Australian.
No, an Englishman.
Englishman, there was a Booker. Well, no, his wife was Australian, I think, right, Booker?
In Negri Sembilan.
Yeah. What's a Booker?
I've met him and tape recorded his name.
Did you? Did you got a surname Ronnie Corson?
No.
He was the planter's leader, Ronnie Corson. But Booker...
Was Corson in Negri Sembilan?
Yeah, in Bahal. Met him a couple of years ago, actually.
How did you like doing this work at Bahal?
I enjoyed it. It was different to what I've been doing before, but I thought we were getting down to real police work in a way, and I had contact with the public and I got well with the public. I like meeting the public, and quite a number of the people used to invite us out, and one Chinese manager often took me around to his house and we had a Chinese meal, and also in the village. My wife liked it, a bit isolated. In fact, my wife and I were the only two Europeans living in Bahal at the time.
Which years were you at Bahal?
Which area? Well, Bahal
is... Which years?
54, 55.
How did you feel about the degree of success that was being achieved against the guerrillas at that time?
Very pleased, actually. In fact, when I handed over to a chap named Johnny West, everything was really under control. Very successful. General Bourne was very pleased. He was the GOC at the time. I met him on several occasions. He was very good. The one-armed general, did you know?
I've heard of him.
Mm. He was very good. He always, when he was in the area, always dropped in and said, in the morning, dropped in with the odd coffee. He was quite pleased with what was going on. And also, the chief police officer was Powell Evans. He was quite pleased as well. Well, if they weren't pleased, they would have moved me anyway, but it wasn't going well. But I enjoyed it. My work there, made several friends. On one occasion, when towards the latter part, when things were really going our way, I had one terrorist surrender to my bungalow, tapping on the window at the back at night.
What happened then?
Well, he just came in and surrendered. I took him, spoke to him what he was on about, and then handed him over.
What did he say to you?
He just wanted to come in. He didn't want to be a terrorist anymore. And came in, we just took him in. What happened to him after Special Branch took over, I know not.
Did he say why he didn't want to be
He just fed up. Well, there's too much pressure going on, you see. He wanted to give up.
What condition was he in?
Quite good.
he wasn't starved.
Oh no, far from it. But the pressure was mounting on them. No, it's in quite good condition. My wife did it, she saw it.
How much danger would he be in for having turned his coat?
Oh, well, if the terrorists got on, they would put him away. But it was accepted with brainwashing to divulging information about it. I wouldn't know that I'm the special branch. I wouldn't be involved in interrogation with this sort of thing. Can't do the lot. But I should imagine the special branch took him over, which they did, and then probably used him as a stooge, you know.
What do you think the attitude of the local people in Megrisa, in Bahau, was towards the guerrillas?
I think as far as the Chinese were concerned, that people, the business, no, the shopkeeping people, like that, they just want to carry on with their business, the Chinese. They're not really interested. Politically, they had no axe to grind whatsoever, as far as I could see. And they just want to do a little bit of business and make a little bit of money.
And the Malays?
Well, they wanted peace in the kampong.
What about the Chinese coolies?
Well, these are the... Well, on the estates, I thought one or two were... Well, it was proved that they were probably had knowledge of the activities of the terrorists. But I think they wanted to get on with their work, because a lot of... The women were tappers as well. They had to get out early morning, tap the rubber trees. You probably know about that. But... I don't think we ever had a case against them. There was some suspicion, obviously. There must be suspicion when you've got tappers living on an estate and next to the jungle. But it didn't worry us at all. They were, but the people in Bahau itself were very pleasant.
Did the guerrillas take any action against the local civilians?
Not in my time. In fact, you could say that the guerrillas were retreating farther into the jungle, away from Bahau. Bahau was only a little, not a town, big village that was the centre of activity. But the rubber estates were all the way round, and the terrorists used to be off the rubber estates. In fact, they used to... In the earlier days, 49, 48, 49, 50 or so, they would be very active in moving about on the estates in the rubber. But later on, with the amount of activity that was going on, especially with the Gurkhas in their patrols, and the activities of the police who were also special police who were living on the estate as guards, then they restarted retreat. And I think this pressure was put on the terrorists, which eventually led to a lot of surrenders, actually, including the one that came to my bungalow. It was going on in other places as well from about 54 onwards, 53 onwards, I would say.
Were there any other army units in your area apart from the Gurkhas and the Hussars?
Hussars weren't in my area. The Hussars were changing to Surrenburn, but they used to come down occasionally on they had the armoured car patrols in the area. But the Gurkhas were the only army unit in the area.
Was there any air force activity against the guerrillas in your area?
Bombing.
Yes.
You used to get the RAF bombing. It used to come over sometimes and used to bomb particular areas. Not often. I don't see been more than three occasions in the course of a year.
What did you think of that?
Not a lot. Other than blind bombing, it gave a bit of, instruction, or they could gain something from the experience of just bombing it. It would light bombs for there, but you got an area probably maybe 1,000 square miles and say, well, there's some terrorists in there, we've bombed them. I didn't think much of this at all. But they enjoyed it, I think, going up there to fly the Canberras over and drop the bombs. I never heard of any terrorist camp being bombed.
Where did you go to after Bahawal?
When?
Where did you go to? What job did you do after Bahawal?
Oh, yeah, coming on to that. I came home on leave, not home on leave, I went to Africa actually for a holiday. Sent my leave out there and travelled right down through Africa to Cape Town. Visited Kenya, Congo, Rhodesia, some Tanganyika and the Union itself. But I came back and I was posted to police headquarters. That's right, police headquarters on a static job.
In Kuala Lumpur?
Yeah. Not very pleasant. Chairborne job. Didn't enjoy it, but at the same time, I suppose the way of life was all right. Had a nice house and used to get, I was in charge of what they call the jungle forts and used to operate from, I was going about once or twice a month and visit the forts, which was very interesting, but I was also involved on what you might call tame thug duties. If there's a visiting dignitary coming in, I was going to, I did the Duke of Gloucester when he gave him, I've got one or two bits here actually.
We'll look at them afterwards.
Alright. And Duke of Gloucester, Prime Minister of Canada, President of India, all sorts of people I dealt with. That's very pleasant. I like the Duke of Gloucester. I like the Duchess even more, actually. Very pleasant person. But that was the time when they handed over independence to Malaya.
What did you think of this jungle fort system?
Very good. Very good. I thought it was very scratchy at first. But I thought it was very, very good indeed, because it protected the aborigines from the activities of the terrorists. The biggest problem was supplies. They had to be airborne in most cases, although one or two you could use the rivers, but also you know, I think fed in the main by airdrop, which was an expensive operation, obviously. But the establishment of the fort were very, very good. They used to have what they call a European police lieutenant in charge. And I used to visit, I think about 8 altogether. I would go round every other month to each one and stay the night, assess their needs of any requirements, and then you just coordinate everything that was going on, the activity, not on the intelligence.